Unfortunately, federal support for soil conservation has eroded over the years.
There's limited technical service available. We've gutted our on-the-ground service providers. We have essentially pulled the rug out from under the structures that would, in fact, support this work on the ground.
The more we learned about carbon markets, the more we began to think they're no substitute for broad systemic solutions, which, as Alden says, remove rewards for doing the wrong things and replace them with support to do the right thing.
I don't think Big Ag is going to just sit around and let their subsidies be redirected to regenerative farmers.
That's why you need to come back for part two about breaking up Big Ag and an agricultural Green New Deal. You've been listening to Cool Solutions. Thanks to our guests, Chris Pravat, Jeff Creek, Alden Connolly, Ed Smith, Jim Goodman, and Stephen Woods. And to Scott Holmes, Josh Woodward, Dan Leibowitz, and Nat Keefe and the Bowties for our music.
This is KBOO Portland.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you are on earth, you are listening to Culture in Motion, twice monthly show where we talk about the intersection between news, you know, culture, art, music, politics, activism. And today, Ryan Danley, my co-host.
What up?
What up, Ryan? Myself, Mike Crenshaw. We have a very, very special guest back for a second time, Das Loon. Das, what's good?
Hey, what's good, y'all? It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you guys a lot for having me, man. You already know I appreciate you a lot.
Likewise, brother, likewise. So
I could have you on every week. you're always up to something that I could totally like talk to you about.
So. A bunch of strange stuff, no. But I could say the same for y'all, really, though.
Right on, brother. Thank you. I think the 7,000-pound gorilla in the room is Judas and the Black Messiah. For those of you that don't know, it's a movie about Fred Hampton and luminary leader, one of my biggest role models. Black Panther Party Chicago was murdered by the FBI and Chicago police. Das, what's good? The move. Tell us what. How do you want to start the conversation about this movie?
Just for starters, by saying that this movie wouldn't have been made possible if it wasn't for innovative thinkers today that brought the family together from the Hampton family. And I mean, without the Lucas brothers, which are amazing, awesome, brilliant comedians, like putting this project into the hands of Shaka, and Ryan Coogler and everybody who made the initial actions to make it happen, it wouldn't have been possible without them and with the family being active in it. So I guess I'll start by saying much love to them and much love to everybody who made that project happen, because in real time, it's going to benefit a lot of people. So it's one way to start the conversation.
And, you know, for our listeners who don't know that you worked on the movie. Can you explain that role to our listeners?
Yeah, so I was the director's assistant on the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. And what that basically means is I went through the script multiple times, found ways to take stuff away, add stuff in that people in the family thought was crucial to the character development of each of the characters in real life. And I was kind of a liaison for the Panthers in the Chicago Party to kind of adapt the feel of what this narrative piece would be told to be. So my role is kind of to be a mediator, in a sense, to the perspectives and the legacy that we're trying to portray, but at the same time, just kind of assisting anything possible that the director could potentially need that I could like get my hands on, whether it be super rare books or information that was valuable to the subject matter. There's just certain things that a film needs that incorporates a certain amount of detail and historical value. So I did a lot of that.
And I think that it's really cool that they incorporated like a dude like you who's clearly got his feet on the street, because, you know, I mean, you don't want Hollywood to screw this up. You know what I mean? Like these kinds of stories, you can see Hollywood trying to, and I think that, you know, they're, in some, you know, things I read online, people are, you know, I think there was some concern about that, you know what I mean? Especially with like, maybe like a little bit of an undersung, because this, I think that this story is going to be new for, I mean, I think Fred Hampton is a little bit more undersung than, of course, you know, Malcolm and Martin, and then into Eldridge Cleaver and Huey Newton. I think a lot of those people are more, but I think Fred Hampton kind of lives in the, like, the sort of, at a different level, and it's such an important story, you know? So I don't know. I think it's pretty rad that they want to make sure that they did it right and gave it the justice it needs, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that's almost what I meant by saying much kudos and credit to the people who made this thing get put together properly, because Hollywood has tried to make Fred Hampton films before to where they weren't taking into consideration what the legacy would mean for the family, like post anything that had to do with the story or how the narrative went. Because so many times narratives get transformed, character traits get lost in development, and we make these real humans into these superhero characters that couldn't be available today in those same perspectives. But with the activism going on, with the political environment that Portland currently has, I think that it's just important to like unify under this base of trying to be resourceful, even in the direction of storytelling. So this story is super time relevant, but I think a lot of people will learn how today's culture is just as provocative as it was then, and that we can build on that. So it is important that they brought grassroots people into the foundation of building this project.
Definitely. So you said,
I appreciate you acknowledging it.
Sorry to interrupt. You said the family was involved. You know, I know and familiar with Chairman Fred Jr. And I've had the good fortune of meeting him on a few different occasions. And how many other family members were involved?
As far as family, Deborah Johnson was there. Her name is currently Mama Akua and Jerry. And she was the girlfriend, spouse, wife, partner to Fred Hampton. And she was there at the time. And she was also there at the time on set during a good majority of production, just giving us input on, like, you know, how things actually went, what was actually available to them at the time as far as like structure, newspapers, organizing. So everything potentially came from, you know, the real source by including the family. But then we also had Black Panther members from the 60s original chapter, like Joan McCarty and Brother Yusuf, who weren't family members, but they're family in the sense of, you know, having built that community and being part of the legacy of the Panthers. So to bring those elders on and to be in contact with multiple members that were even there at the time, like Blair Anderson, he was there and he was shot in the raid with Fred Hampton. And we've been having beautiful, great conversations about what it means today to be a revolutionary and whatnot. So I think all this kind of is inclusive of transpiring a bigger image of like what progress looks like. But that comes from our elders, the people that we brought there, the family members, the people who've been through all this stuff. I mean, we can build a story and a narrative that we think is interesting, but it doesn't help the economic development in the same way that someone who has been building those resources could bring to the table. But not only that, it was beneficial to the legacy of the story because it's their story, it's their legacy.
You know? That's right. Wow. That's incredible. I can't wait to see it. That's going to be available on February 12th to the public, correct?
Yeah, February 12th, releasing on HBO Max and then in select COVID-friendly theaters that are open across the U.S. But yeah, I hope that people are able to screen from home mostly just to stay safe and whatnot, but also give their input and like constructive criticism on how they think that the story got navigated. Because I know that there's going to be a lot of different critique on simple things, like the fact that Daniel Kaluuya played Fred and he's not an African American, he's British and whatnot, but all these things kind of dilute the concentrated concept. And if you look at the bigger narrative, like I would like to hear constructive criticism on what process looks like in the words of like progress.
I heard that you guys filmed in Cleveland. Now, being that Cleveland is a city in the Midwest, there's going to be a similar look in a lot of places. Had you spent a lot of time in Chicago prior to going to shoot on set in Cleveland?
Me personally, no. I've still not been to Chicago, but Shaka King, Ryan Coogler, Chapman Fred Hampton Jr. is based out there, still is out there, holds down the Black Panther Cubs out there, and invited a whole bunch of the crew members out there to kind of go through the real locations of where Fred Hampton actually was. And even Daniel himself sat down at, you know, Fred's table where he'd eat in the morning. He went to the steps that Fred would speak on. He just visited all these historical sites to kind of like engulf the energy and the value of like what was to be portrayed in this film. So taking that back to Cleveland and stuff and seeing the way that buildings are still structured out there and things are left alone and real estate was left to be underdeveloped and all that stuff, it brought a sense of like community development and tension that I think wasn't there until we hit up them two spots, like as a crew. Like they brought the Chicago vibe and we're in Cleveland having to make what we could out of it, but also build resources in that same way because it was structured so similar to like what the oppression looked like then. Right now though.
Wow, yeah.
You know, I think there's this, you know, kind of with the way that, you know, history's taught, which is like this sort of, you know, most history's taught like on a classic story, like hero's journey story. There's a main character and a problem to be solved and stuff, like, you know. So like kind of like, you know, I heard this thing the other day that Anne Frank, Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King, and Barbara Walters were all born the same year. You know, and it's just like that, you know, like, but we're taught that all these things happened a long time ago. And I think specifically with like civil rights stuff, it's like really made to look like it happened a long time ago is because it fits this sort of narrative. But like, really, these are all like the same people. And if all these people weren't killed, they'd still be alive today doing these things and not even being like elderly per se, you know what I mean? But like, just like older Americans. And, you know, so, you know, it's like, so like, it's cool, not cool, but like interesting to see that you can go to like some place like Cleveland and they're basically just dealing with the exact same stuff that Fred Hampton was dealing with then, because really like, that wasn't then, that's just is, you know what I mean?
In like, real time. I mean, the Tamir Rice story is in Cleveland, right. Ohio, you know, and it's, that's something that we're currently still battling. And I did a podcast a couple of days ago, if not a week ago, with Tamir Rice's mom, Samaria Rice, and we had a long conversation about how the development in the case has not been what she had envisioned and how she's been set up barricades on barricades in the way that she knows other families have as well, and the way that it's stunted the progress. And it's, I mean, it's valuable information to have from someone that's going through it, but it's even more valuable to, like, you know, put empathy behind what your structure is on how you're progressive and be transformative of those progressive procedures, you know, and making films like this, but also including community activists and people who've had a voice for so long was super important. Cause to what you said, there's people like Blair Anderson, who's consistently been a revolutionary, who's just went so underground, but he was on the same level of Fred Hampton, but he was a Blackstone, he was a gang member, he was shot by the Panthers, then joined the Panthers, and this man is still alive today telling his story and feels almost like left out until he was called from the mountains by being an attribute to this film and stuff like this. So it enables us to like be more productive with our way of thinking through the legacy of how we create content through these mediums.
That's fascinating, because I've, you know, often studied the story of the Black Stone Rangers that became the Black Peace Stone Rangers, that became the Elrukins, and Jeff Fort, and the fact that it was COINTELPRO that destroyed the opportunity for the Panthers and the Stones to be connected. And so to hear that there's another voice, because we get, those of us who aren't close to the people and the experiences, there are often one name. There's a name or a couple of names that get talked about the most. And so we don't really think about other voices that were also there that can also broaden our understanding. What is, when you said that you and some of these elders were talking about what it meant to be a revolutionary then and what it means to be a revolutionary today, what are some of the things that you picked up from those conversations?
Just that it's beneficial to be consistent in how you delegate priorities to some of these organizations and procedures and stuff like that. But more than that, like sticking to certain codes of conduct so we can all be on the same level and unifying, instead of finding these like initial ways of like helping divide forces and stuff. And that was a lot of what they had said. They're like, man, you didn't know who was your brother or who was a cop back at the time. And as things get pushed politically into different environments today, I think that we still haven't understood fully what that means as far as what agents mean and what they meant back then compared to what they mean now. Because I consistently have a conversation with comrades and friends about how, like, you are your own agent today, and technology is so invasive that you snitch on yourself without knowing it in all these dynamic ways that you couldn't put possible unless you were that detective trying to incriminate an enemy. And if your enemy is just someone who wants to tear down your privilege or structure, and it's simply that, then oppression is to be had. And if you don't amplify the contradictions, then most likely you're going to fail as a revolutionary. And that's a lot of what I learned from those elders, is that if we don't unify and we don't have the same structure, patterns, and we're not consistent, someone's going to call someone out for coming up short. But there's simple basic things like health that need to be priority before we try to gain any sort of monetary capital on the development on things. Because if mentally we can't hold ourselves down, how are we the best attribute to our community? So.
You worked with some really talented people too. You know, and you know, as Portland, it's really cool to see the people that are in the movie. You know, I'm a huge Lakeith Stanfield fan. I think that as an artist, it's just like he must have been just great to work with. I mean, he's got that subtle. He's got that subtle juggernaut thing going on. You know what I mean? Like, it's so hard. Like, as a deadpan comic, to get that like energy out of like low keyness. What was it like to work with like him and like those folks and their dedication to the source material?
Amazing. And I feel like people underrate folks in this industry and with this artistry that they have of portraying certain perspectives. Like, I know for a fact, because I saw it in real time, that it was super hard for Lakeith to play this character, to play this like almost condescending snitch pig of a character. And I mean, it broke him emotionally to have to do these things to such a hero, even if it was for pretend, because of how real it felt when we were there. And he's like one of the most ridiculously talented people, just like Dominique Fishback and Dominique Thorne and Daniel Kaluuya, because it felt like they transferred energy outside of their body and became the energy of what was. And it was very specific to how their characters were being built which is amazing if you can emotionally put yourself in that place. There's a certain story that I'll tell real quick, because I'm not allowed how, I don't know how much I'm allowed to tell, but we were filming in a prison at one point, and Daniel just wanted to understand how it felt to be like incarcerated, but to be left there and to not have anything but those walls and the people that were in them. And we had tried super hard. Well, by we, I mean him. I just told him that I had his back and I was going to be there with him during it. But he had tried his best to like stay overnight by himself in this super crazy prison, just to be there with like one security guard. He wanted to stay there for like till the next day, which is a good like 13 hours away or something like that. But he just wanted to understand what it was like to be an inmate in such a like brutal place. And it was interesting because nobody was asking for these characters to be developed in these certain ways, but he just wanted to be engulfed into it because it was so important to him to prove this legacy was important, you know? So from Lakeith to Dominique, all these people put their all into it, but they're also like just multi-talented in so many ways. If it comes to writing, when it comes to, you know, artistic integrity, how they develop these characters, design, you know, all of them were brilliant and great to work with. I know for a fact that me and Shaka picked the best people and the only people who could have played these parts.
I actually, you know, it's funny, I haven't been this excited. Like, I was thinking about it. I haven't been this excited for a movie. And I mean, just because I just think that between like Fred Hampson and Kwame Ture, like my, you know, like just people I'm really passionate about growing up and like reading about that, and then also, you know, knowing somebody, you know, having a friend who was involved with it was great, and having great actors. But I like really haven't like been like this excited for a story. This is so funny, but like since like Terminator 2, you know what I mean? Like when I was a kid, like when I saw that was coming out, I'm like, oh my God, this looks so dope. Or like Batman movies or whatever. So like, it's really exciting that, and there's a lot of great buzz about it, and a lot of people are really excited about it. And like, what a cool thing to be part of, because it's like, you know, like a lot of things kind of come and go, you know, like these movies and like biopics and all this sort of stuff. But this one actually has like proper buzz to it. And so it's going to be really cool to get that story out there, and especially seeing that it was so well tended to, you know. So.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I know it sounds weird and everything, but I hope that it's provocative enough for people to heavily critique in the way that it brings more progressive nature to communities, so we can figure out the things that we got problems with instead of like complaining about them. Because I think that that's a big thing that we lost within Fred Hampton's legacy, is the independency to be like, you know, I can figure this out and then bring advantage to the community, and not the opposite way, which is the way so many people that I know and activists think these days. They're like, man, if I can get some help from the community, I can start. And it's kind of the opposite, but I know that this movie is coming at a perfect time and couldn't have came at a better time. I'm glad that, you know, studios waited to let this happen. Everything happened for a reason, but I mean, it was an honor to be on it with some people that really care about things. Working with Ryan Coogler, after seeing the work he's done behind the community in Oakland, the Oscar Grant story, Fruitvale Station, and then Wakanda and Black Panther and everything. Like, I know that there's an innovative world to be had, and storytelling is going to play a huge part in it. So I appreciate you guys being like super excited about this, because I feel the same way, but I also feel almost biased because I've been with the Panthers for over 10 years, and I've been trying to exclusively tell these stories independently. But you know, it's about working together, but building yourself as well to be the best resource. So I'm excited for this movie too, and I hope that people take it not just as an entertainment lesson, but like as an attribute to their growth process.
This is I second everything that Ryan's saying in terms of how excited I am, and I'm a little bit, you know, it's real subjective for me, because I can, to me, what you're doing and what you've been able to do is a dream come true. So what was like, what was the process like for how you were able to get involved with this project?
It almost, just because of the way that I feel like the world's set up and America's set up, and just my personal opinion, but I feel like it was almost some spook who sat by the door type of stuff, to where I really, really wanted to learn and there wasn't a lot of doors open and there wasn't a lot of options in certain occupations and stuff. But to get there, I had to really take some hits on the jaw and lower myself to what people envisioned me as, just to prove myself to be more and whatnot. So, I mean, still people to this day have a different idea of what I do than what I actually do. And it's hard to explain, but it's just a matter of like growth and learning your options and knowing what your main goal is and transforming into that. So I feel like what really got me into this whole entire thing is just wanting to understand where oppression comes from and what the best medium is to kind of like explain and communicate resources or explanations. So I've done music, I've done photography, I've done video work, I've done magazine work, worked for charities, but I wanted to have my feet and my hands in these places so that I could better understand them, just to empower the community and be more of a resource so that confused kids like I was have actual adult answers when adults don't, because, you know, the way things are set up are just naturally unfair sometimes. And that's the honest answer.
I think when we talk about like privilege and things like that, I mean, I think that that's the, like, so many people are just like learning as they go. They're like building their boat in the middle of the lake, you know? And like, we live in this world where like people don't even realize that they can do things because they just feel like that's for something else, for somebody else. And, you know, to have like somebody who like yourself, who's like, you know, taking the bull by the horns and said, you know what, I'm going to learn this and I'm going to do this, like instructing that is like, I mean, I just think couldn't be any more valuable. I haven't like personally, like even just from mildly on myself, like I don't have any formal writing trainer, but now I'm a writer. And it's just like, it really just took like somebody mentioning to me like, oh, you can just do this. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have like a master's degree in writing. You can actually just like try to do it. And the worst that people can say is no. And, you know, like I didn't ever believe that growing up. And particularly for somebody in the y'all situation where it's like clearly like built against, you know what I mean? Like to have somebody be like, no, you just got to go do this stuff. And we got to take ownership of this stuff. Cause cause that's, you know, for me, that's where the rubber's going to hit the road. You know, it's like, we can own this media and these, you know, these airwaves, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. We have to build the confidence, and we can't keep like degrading each other for what we expect each other's potential to be. Like, there's so many ways to be resourceful and not be a harmful, attribute for someone's success. And I mean, us three are pretty good examples of that. I mean, we consistently work together, we communicate with each other, but we don't like have any weird bad feelings if someone's not doing what we expect the other person to be doing, because that world doesn't exist. We all know that we're responsible for ourselves, but like, we're leading by example, which is like super productive and a good process to have. Because if I can throw someone Mike's way or your way, and they want to learn about writing, doing podcasts, doing music, traveling the world, political environments in different places, y'all have so many more resources and background in that. And if I don't give that person the privilege of having that resource, it doesn't make sense. I mean, it just doesn't. And being a kid that thought that I would like not be able to do anything, I didn't think I'd make it past 18 because I was a gang member homeless in New Mexico. If I could tell myself back then, who I'd be, I simply wouldn't believe it, because that world doesn't seem like it could potentially exist. And that's wrong. That's the wrong type of information. So we got to uplift each other and continue to like you know, do this work so that we can feel confident behind it, even in our growth, because we're not always right, we're not always wrong, and things aren't always super perfect.
Man, you know, that is a good note to end on. I wish as many people as can possibly listen to this episode get to do it. It's an honor to be among both of you brothers, and thank you, Das, for coming through, man.
Oh, thank you a lot. Really appreciate it, man.
We'll have you back on again soon, and we'll get to the nitty-gritty of what's going on in this world. I look forward to seeing the movie, and we'll get back to it.
Thanks, man. Great being on with you guys. I really appreciate you guys. Hope to talk to you soon. Yeah, thanks for the love. Yeah.
Listener supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Is your organization planning